Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This episode is on Miketz. This episode is generously sponsored by Adar and Nama Margolis in memory of their beloved family members, Zichron Livracha, Tamar bat Shlomo Yosef, Shoshana bat Shaul, Yosef ben Shoshana, and Batsheva Chaya bat Noam Yigal Verina. Thank you very much for sponsoring this podcast. May their neshamot have an aliyah. This episode is on Miketz with Rabbi Alex Israel. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week we read Parshat Miketz, which is the bang in the middle of the trilogy, which deals with the Yosef story, Parshat Vayeshev. We saw the sale of Yosef and his experience in incarcerated in Egypt. Parshat Miketz, he rises to greatness and begins to encounter his brothers. And next week, Parshat Vayigash will take us to the ultimate showdown between Yosef and Yehuda, which leads Yosef to reveal his true identity. And we will see the reunion of Yosef and his father, and indeed the reunion of the entire family in Egypt. I want to reflect back on the Yosef story and show us a certain turning point in Parshat Miketz. But in order to get there, I'd like to make some comments about the sale of Yosef. I keep on trying to ponder just how much cruelty it takes in order to sell a brother to slavery, how much hatred and animosity there is in this family at the beginning of the story. In Parashat Miketz, as Yosef unveils his dreams and reports them on a regular basis to his brothers, as Yosef walks around with a colored coat, a special symbol of royalty given to him by his father, we read here that the brothers, vayisne'u oto, they hate him, v'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, they couldn't speak a peaceful word with him. This is quite a statement. They couldn't speak peaceably with him. And I think this comes to an extreme point in the scene of Yosef's sale, where we see his father ironically go sending Yosef to see his brothers with the words, Lechna ure'ei et shalom achecha bet shalom hatzon, go and see the peace of your brothers and the peace of the sheep. He is looking for peace. Yosef, seemingly unaware of the effect that he's having on his brothers, talks about et achai anochim avakesh, I seek my brothers, but the minute they see him, they say, hinei bal hachalomot halazeba, here is this dreamer, va'ata lechu v'nahargehu v'nashlicheu ba'achad haborot, now let's kill him and throw his dead body into one of the pits, and we'll see what happens to his dreams. Reuven indeed saves him and says Lona kenu nefesh, but it's later Yehuda who, after they see the Egyptian caravan, turns to his brothers and says, Ma betza ki naharog et achinu v'chisinu et damo. What's the point of killing our brother and covering up his blood? Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. V'yadenu al tibo, so our hands will not be on us, on him. In other words, we won't be implicated. Ki achinu b'sareinu hu, because after all, he is our brother. I'm not sure what he means by that, because by selling him, he's talking in a most unbrotherly way. Selling somebody into the slave market frequently meant that that person was slated for abuse, for all sorts of humiliation. In ancient Rome, I've read a statistic that slaves didn't last more than about a year on average. And I really wonder what would have happened to Yosef had he not been sold to Potiphar in particular, but instead been sold to menial labor or something else. How long would he have lasted? The callousness of the brothers, where they're sort of horse trading with Yosef, should we kill him, should we sell him, indicates a huge distance between him and them, and a huge, cruelness of spirit. How can it possibly be that brothers can speak this way about Achinu, Besareinu, about their brother, and their own flesh. The hatred in this family was tremendous, was intense, and one does have to wonder whether the hatred doesn't just begin in this generation, but possibly goes back a generation to the tremendous, intense rivalry between Rachel and Leah, their mothers, and whether that somehow seeped down into the generation and allowed the acrimony, the distance, the alienation, which led one brother to be sold and possibly killed by his other brothers. I'll maybe relate to one further phrase here, where we see that the brothers bring back the bloody coat to their father, who comes up with the conclusion, Taruf, Taruf, Yosef. Yosef has been torn. And we read here, Bayit'abel al-bono yamim rabim. He mourns for his son for many days, possibly even many years. Vayakumu kol banav v'chol banotav l'nachamo, all his sons and his daughters, maybe meaning his daughters-in-law, come to console him. Vayima'ein l'hitnachem, he refuses any form of comfort and says, Ki ered el bani avel sh'ola, I will go to the grave in a state of mourning. Vayifkoto aviv, and here we see Yaakov crying. And I wonder about this scene where the brothers are in some sort of, what were the brothers thinking? The brothers originally thought that they would bring the evidence and their father would just accept it. They see their father mourning and they all try and console him, but he will not be consoled. And we witness him just simply in a state of tears, in a state of terrible crying. Did the brothers bargain on this being his reaction? Did they imagine that after a short amount of time, Yosef would be forgotten and life could move on? How did the brothers react to their father's endless weeping, his constant mourning? Did it invoke in them some sense of remorse? Did it awaken them to try and imagine, try and think what they might have done? I have no clue to how to answer this, but this peak of acrimony that we read about and this trough of absolute inconsolable mourning on Jacob's part really, to my mind, highlight the depths of emotion that this story invoke and the callousness of the brothers, the way in which they had no clue what they were doing, in which they were absolutely unaware of the seriousness in which they, what they'd got themselves into. And now I'd like to turn to Parashat Miketz, where we see that the famine is already underway and there is no grain in the land of Canaan. Vayar Yaakov, I'm reading now from the beginning of chapter 42. Vayar Yaakov ki yeshever b'Mitzrayim, Yaakov saw that there is grain in Egypt, and Yaakov said to his sons, Lama titra'u, which sometimes is translated as, why are you just looking around? In other words, why are you doing nothing? Don't you realize that there is grain in Egypt? I'm an old man, you're young people. Aren't you going to send somebody? And now we have another Vayomer. In the beginning, Vayomer Yaakov levanav, lama titra'u, why are you looking around? When we see a Vayomer followed with Vayomer, it means there's no response. There's a need for a second statement. And so in verse 2, Vayomer hinei shamati ki yeshev Mitzrayim, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Rudushama v'shivu lanu misham, go buy grain, v'nichye v'lo yamut, v'lo namut, we'll live and not die. For Yaakov, it's obvious to go down to Egypt. Yaakov doesn't know that Yosef is there. He says to his sons, what are you waiting around for? And then has to give them an explicit instruction, go down to Egypt. I gain the sense that already from this double language, the brothers are sort of biding their time. Egypt's the one place they don't want to go. They know that Joseph has been sent down there. I doubt they ever imagine in their wildest dreams that they're going to experience an encounter with Yosef himself. And yet, it seems like they are reluctant to go down, that they are hesitant to take the same route that their brother went, I don't know if they know what they will meet, or maybe this is even just some sort of some subconscious foreboding, and yet they don't want to go, and it has to be an explicit instruction that sends them down. But here, once again, the biblical narrator, the words of the Torah itself, are going to reveal to us what's happening in their careful choice of language, because no sooner have we heard Jacob's instruction to say, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt, go down there and get us grain so that we will live and not die. The next phrase is, Vayeredu achei Yosef asara lishbor bar b'mitzrayim. Suddenly the brothers are called achei Yosef. They are called the brothers of Joseph. It doesn't say the 10 sons of Jacob. It says the 10 brothers of Joseph go down to get grain in Egypt. That Binyamin achi Yosef. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Yaakov didn't send with his brothers. Ki amar pen yikra'enu ason. He said maybe an accident will happen. And now, Vayosef vayavo b'nei Yisrael ishbor b'toch Mitzrayim, etc. The use of this language, the 10 brothers of Joseph, is already telling us that these brothers are destined to a meeting with their long-lost brother Yosef. But then in the next verse it talks about Binyamin achi Yosef, Benjamin Joseph's brother, who is not sent because something might happen to him. This delicate use of the word brother by the text is coming to not only to tell us that there is going to be a meeting of brothers, but in order to tell us that, how should I say this, some brothers are more worthwhile or worth more than others. The 10 brothers, brothers of Joseph, can go down to Egypt, but there is one brother who is the brother of Joseph, a brother from his father and from his mother, who is not sent. And I don't think this is because Benjamin is too young to travel. Pen yikra'enu ason, there's a specific reason. Maybe the family of Rachel are too delicate. It is Rachel who dies on the way. It is Joseph who goes missing when he is in transit. And therefore this is a child to be treated with kid gloves. This is a brother who is different from other brothers. And I think what this surfaces for us is that even though, as we know from the story, 20 years have passed, even more than 20 years, because Joseph was 17 when he was sold to Egypt, 30 when he became viceroy, and there have been at least another 7 years of good years, and now we're in the famine years, so we're definitely past the 20 years mark. There is still divisions being made in this family. Not all branches of the family are exactly the same. Some brothers are treated as Achi Yosef, and some brothers are just Achei Yosef. This family is still riddled by favoritism, and there's a very still strong awareness about who is the Ben Rachel and who is the Ben Leah, who is descended from Rachel, who from Leah. In other words, this is not an equal playing field. And I think all this is contained within these very careful phrases. And I'll go further and just point out one further phrase. We're told here now, the brothers go down. Verse 6, Yosef hu hashalit al haaretz, he is the ruler over the land. Hu hamashbir l'chol haaretz, he distributes all of the food. Vayavo achei Yosef, there's that phrase again, the brothers of Yosef come and bow down to him twice. And Yosef sees his brothers, vayar Yosef et echav, vayakireim, and he recognizes them. Vayitnaker alehem, but he acts like a foreigner to them. Vayidaber etam kashot, speaks harshly and says, Me'ayim batem, where are you from? And they say, Me'eretz Kanan, lishbor ochel, we're from the land of Canaan, to be able to get food. And vayaker Yosef, here it says it again, he recognized his brothers. Ve'heim lo hikiruhu, and they did not recognize him. And now, please notice that this word vayaker has been three times, but there is another word which interplays with him, which is so carefully connected, but it is the opposite meaning. Yosef vayaker etechav vayakireim, but he acts vayitnaker. One letter difference, an extra nun. Instead of vayaker, vayitnaker, he acts as a nochri, he acts as an alien, he acts as a foreigner. He acts at a distance and speaks harshly to them. And one other word, which sounds like Vayakher, but has another letter in it. Vayizkor Yosef et hachalomot asher chalam lahem. Joseph sees his brothers prostrating themselves before him, and suddenly he remembers his dreams and says, Meraglim atem lirot et harvat haaretz batem. This word, Vayakher, the notion of recognition, is a very potent word. It is full with meaning because it has come up before in the story of Joseph's sale. Because there, the brothers, back in chapter 37, the brothers who had sold him down to Egypt, brought his blood-stained coat, or had his blood-stained coat sent to their father. Apparently they didn't bring it themselves. They were afraid that it would give them away, and therefore it says, Vayishalchu et ketonet hapasim. They sent it. I don't know who they sent it with. But now they say, they sent it to their father, and they say, Haker na. Please identify, Haketonet bincha hi imlo. Is it your son's coat? Vayakira. And of course, Jacob recognizes it and says, Ketonet bini. It is indeed the coat of my son, Chayara achalatu. An animal must have eaten him. And this is what they say. Vayaker indicates a sense of immediate recognition. And in an act of tremendous cruelty, it is the brothers who send the coat back to ask their father to identify, if you want, the last pieces of evidence of Yosef and to draw the ultimate conclusion of Yosef's demise. And now this word comes along, and the question, of course, is, are you Vayaker or are you Vayitnaker? Do you recognize and recognize not just that this is your brother, but recognize the brotherliness of your brother? Or are you vayitnaker? Do you act as an alien? Of course, there's also the question about when we see our brothers, what we remember. And Yosef is vayizkar. He remembers the dreams. He remembers the dreams and sees fate coming true, sees his dreams, which he clearly saw as very significant. The dreams of the brothers, sheaves bowing down to him, the stars bowing down to him, and remembers those dreams and decides to take this further by accusing them of spying and throwing them into jail. And it is this point in the story, after the brothers have been in jail for 3 days, and after they are told that they can go home, but that their brother Shimon is going to be kept there until they bring Benjamin back, that we hear the brothers talking for the first time. And this is what they say. We hear Reuven, sorry, we hear the brothers say, Vayomru ishel achiv, aval ashemim anachnu al achinu, asher ra'inu tzarat nafsho bitchananu eleinu velo shamanu, al kein ba'eleinu hatzara hazot. They say, we are guilty for our brother when we saw his personal distress, his emotional distress, when he pleaded to us and we didn't hear. That is why all this trouble is happening to us. And Reuven answers and says, didn't I tell you? Halo amarti aleichem leimor al techtu bayele. Didn't I tell you not to touch the boy? Velo shamatem. You wouldn't listen to me. V'gam damo hinei nidrash. And now his blood is being sought. V'heim lo yadu. They didn't know. Ki shomei Yosef ki hamelitz benotam. They didn't know that Yosef was listening because there was an interpreter between them. And at this point, Yosef has an emotional moment. He cries. He finds himself unable to contain his emotional reaction as he hears his brothers talking about the events of 20 years ago. Why am I referring to this moment? Because I would argue that this moment, first of all, this moment is remarkable. 20 years have passed and the brothers are talking almost as if it is the night after Joseph's kidnap and sale. The brothers experienced this incarceration in Egypt, this being thrown into jail, and they can't understand why it's happening. They can't understand why they're being asked to bring down Benjamin and cause their father further pain. And they say, oh, we know exactly why this is happening. And they suddenly start remembering that when Joseph was in the pit, we weren't able to see his pain, his distress, his awful panic, his fright, when he cried out from the pit and we didn't listen. Now, go back to last week's parasha, to chapter 37. It doesn't say that they heard him crying. It never tells us that Joseph cried from the pit. In fact, it tells us something very different. It says they took him, they threw him into the pit. The pit was empty, there was no water, and they sat down to le'chol lechem, to eat bread. They were calm enough to have a meal, you know, to make their sandwiches and to sit there having a picnic in the countryside while Joseph was in the pit. And maybe they even distanced themselves because, so that they couldn't hear his cries, but they knew he was screaming. Save me, save me, help me, help me. The amazing thing is that it's only 20 years later that they really hear his cries. That instead of vayitznaker, instead of being alien to Joseph, suddenly they are opening themselves up, lahakir, to actually recognize Joseph. They're reliving the moment. They're reopening the wounds. They are in the moment. And suddenly, for the first time in 20 years, Joseph's cries have penetrated their souls. And that is what I think is the power of Parshat Miketz. You know, it's very difficult to know why Joseph puts them through the terrible torture that he puts them through. And by the way, how much he's aware of it, I don't know, but he puts his father through the worst torture of all, forcing his father to give up Benjamin. But this story is a replay of the Yosef story in many, many different ways. I'll mention one further point and one further place in the parasha where this is definitely true. And that is that when eventually Yaakov caves in and agrees to send Binyamin down to Egypt, he knows they're going to have to meet with this man, with this Egyptian man, this ruler in Egypt, and he says, "Im kein efor zot asu, if it has to be this way, and you've got to take Benjamin back, k'chu mizimrat ha'aretz b'chleichem, v'horidu le'ish mincha. At the very least, take down from the fruits of the land a gift. Ma'at sori u'ma'at dvash n'cho'ot v'lot botnim u'shkedim." This famine time, and there's not much there. So he tells them to take with them various fruits and spices. I'm reading here from chapter 43, verse 11, where he says, take some balm and some honey, some gum, and various different nuts and almonds. But when you read these substances, we again refer back to chapter 37. And in chapter 37, when Yosef is being taken down to Egypt, it tells us what the caravan which took him down was carrying. It says that there was an Orchat Ishmaelim, an Ishmaelite caravan, who were carrying down to Egypt. Necho'ot utzri velot. Necho'ot utzri velot. That's exactly the things that they're carrying down. He tells them, take ma'at sari, Umat Devash Nechot Velot. In other words, those same, the balm, the gum, the ladenum, all of these things, how should I put it? The same smells that Joseph smelt in his nostrils as he was going down to Egypt are the same smells which accompany Benjamin. If we had to put it in a modern context, we would have a soundtrack and we'd play exactly the same music as Benjamin is going down as when Joseph went down. Almost to say that this is a replay. This is a rerun of the same scene, except now the brothers are going to do it better. And when Binyamin gets into trouble and he's accused of stealing Joseph's goblet, they're going to stand up for him. Instead of rejecting their brother, they're going to stand up for their brother. Instead of being absolutely deaf to their father's pain, they're now going to take on all of his pain. And it's going to be Judah, the person who sold Joseph down to Egypt, who is actually going to take responsibility for Benjamin and repair the damage. And this is what makes this story so remarkable. This is ultimately the deepest story of Teshuvah, where the Rambam tells us in Hilchot Teshuvah, in the laws of repentance, that the ultimate repentance is when you find yourself in the same circumstances, but you act differently. The brothers, before they can act differently, though, have to have a moment of vayaker, a moment of recognition. The difficult question of who is more of a brother and who is less of a brother in this family needs to be recognized head on. And the brothers need to be able to hear Joseph's cries today, what they couldn't do 20 years ago. And it's only because they are able to go through this process of recognition and this process of understanding and internalization. It's the opening of those heartstrings. It's the opening of not only their ears, but of their souls, which enables them to act very, very differently in the next time. Some people look at the Yosef story and see it as a terrible stain on our history, a stain of brotherly hatred. But you know what? Hatred sometimes happens within families. And the question isn't whether there is brotherly hatred, but the question is whether we learn to rise above that hatred, whether we learn to go beyond that hatred, where we learn to recognize the terrible rifts within our family and to learn how to repair them. And therefore, I see Parashat Miketz, the very heart of this story, as depicting and describing through its very careful use of language and its literary skill, the measure by which the brothers come to terms with their sins of yesteryear and learn to be able to have a different attitude, which will help them to take the Jewish people. It's Jacob's family who are the first family where the family stayed together. In Abraham's family, Ishmael was ejected. In Isaac and Rebekah's family, we see Jacob in and Esau out. Now all the brothers are going to be part of the family, and this can only be if they undergo the process that I have just described. So I hope I've given some sort of insight into the story. Many of you will be listening to this on Hanukkah, so I wish you a Hanukkah Sameach and a Shabbat Shalom, and I hope that we will be able to learn the appropriate lessons of keeping the family, the Jewish family, together without nearly as much pain as is contained within the Yosef story. Thank you very much for listening and look forward to next time.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in. And you may also want to check out Elmod, the Pardes website for all of our electronic learning resources. It's available to you all the time at elmad.pardes.org. Thanks very much, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.